Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Diana Deeney. Hi, Fred.
Hey, hey, Diana. You were just chatting. We were talking about this, that, and the other thing, and work stuff and everything else. And you mentioned that you were helping somebody, one of your clients, to get used to, I call it capturing value, but documenting or getting it visible, the cost of quality or the cost of unreliability or whatever phrase somebody wants to use.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, and then you mentioned that it's not taught in school, but it is taught in this podcast.
Yes.
We got to talk about it.
Yeah, it's true. Even when I'm thinking in my early years and working and stuff, it still wasn't a focus or on my radar for some reason. Maybe it's me, but I think, you know, especially with the engineering degrees, you're focused on a lot of the technical aspects of engineering. Mm-hmm. And they don't get so much into project management. And even if they do, it's more of timelines and resources and not really considering the value of activities or inactivity or,
right.
Yeah. they don't really get into that, but it ends up being important when you're trying to advocate for a test or to not do a test or to do things differently. It's the language of management in
right.
short.
Yeah. And I don't think it's just you, is that usually it's, you know, your manager or your project manager or somebody else is considering all these factors and saying, all right, this is a priority, Diana, go work on this. And they don't fill in the blanks of why it's important. You know, it's just like, right, you guys work on this, this, and this, and you, this part of the team work on this, this, and this, and they orchestrate that. But they have learned it partly through experience. And I've never sat for or looked at the project management, the PMP, I think it's called, certificate.
Mm, yes.
And I'm quite sure it does a bunch of, you know, what's a priority, what's important. And depending on the program, it might be time to market. All right. How do we get there good enough, but on time, and so on. Or it might be the quality has to be top or whatever, or cost,
yeah.
Stuff like that.
I remember being a junior engineer, and there were things going on with the company I was working with. Like one division was being sold and another one was being purchased and things were moving around. And it was a manager or more senior. It was a manager type person. And they're like, well, don't you care about what's happening? I'm like, it is not affecting the project that I am tasked to get done. So not paying attention to it. Yeah.
That's right.
Because you're in the daily grind and you don't look up, you know, you're focused on what it is you need to do for your project and the other stuff that's happening around you. I mean, there's some benefit to be able to focus like that.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, when it comes down to it, you really should be aware of what's going on and who has priority, because eventually it is going to affect you.
Yeah, definitely is. And I think there's something to get your, you know, the task in front of you and the job you need to do is get a handle of that. Yet it's not in a vacuum. It is in context of all these other priorities and all these other things that are going on. And if you find that it's really not useful and nobody needs that work, you know, if you every month you spend a day filling out some survey or form or, you know, study or document a bunch of stuff and nobody ever looks at it, then, which I did early in my career, I just went to my boss, do you ever read these things? He goes, oh, no. Then why am I filling it out? And he goes, I don't know. So he said, no, you can stop doing that. We're, you know, and he was the one that told me to do it when I first got there. And I'm like, okay, I'm glad I asked.
It was just a habit.
Yeah, it was just, that's what we did. And it was like, no, why are we doing this? And he's like, I don't look at him. So
that's one of my pet peeves, busy work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I did learn, and this was Ron, one is an engineering manager, and one of the things, two things that we did was we were always learning something. I mean, we were doing statistics courses and process control courses, and then we had to go apply it and go do stuff. And every quarter we'd get together with all the engineers in the company and talk about what projects we had and, you know, the bigger projects and stuff, that progress and accomplishments and stuff like that. And part of that format was basically answer the question, so what? What was this for? What difference did it make? What, how did it, you know, why were you even working on it, kind of thing? And I had one project that it was an experiment that started with just, I need to apply process control, do a control chart. So I put it on this one line that the team that was in this one station in the process were complaining about this product having too many defects in it. So I said, well, I just learned about, you know, the P chart or C chart or whatever kind of chart it was. And we started just plotting it. And it was roughly 14 defects per 10,000 feet, which wreaked havoc with trying to create 300-foot reels. And
yeah.
And so every time they did that, I had them record, you know, what was the length that you had to scrap? And they could, if it was a 300-foot roll and got over 100 feet, they could make a 100-foot roll. Yet it was a lot of rework and a bunch of other stuff that had to happen. And so we just started capturing that. And then I went, you know, and asked, how much does this cost per foot? You know, what do we sell it for, kind of thing? And I said, wow, that's a big number. And took it to Ron, my engineering boss, and said, we probably need to fix this. And he goes, all right, you got a project. I'm like, oh, damn it.
you should have approached with, somebody else needs to fix this.
That's right. Yeah. I didn't learn that lesson very well. I still don't do that. But anyway, I said, all right, so we were doing failure analysis and figured out that it was part of this extrusion process. And so we went and experimented with different temperatures and a bunch of other stuff, and it just wasn't budging it at all. And then one of the techs, you know, said, hey, my neighbor works in this other division and they use the same material. They don't have any problems with their jacket that they're extruding. Maybe I should ask him what they do. And it turned out they used a different style of extrusion screw. So it would, instead of a straight screw that just melted and pushed the plastic through to the extrusion head, it remixed it. It made it go backwards a little bit. So it stayed in the chamber longer and it mixed more.
Oh.
And I thought, okay. So we didn't even ask permission. We just went and drove over to the other division, and this guy gave us this, you know, and it's like 15 feet long steel, 6-inch diameter, big screw, basically. And we,
that's huge.
And it took three of us to get it in the truck, and we stuck it in the machine and ran it, and you could see it in the control chart. That was like 2 days later when we ran that reel. It had one defect on the entire length, and it was in the first inch. And we think it just got smashed by the equipment when we were moving it. And so we ran a few more of them. So I had, you know, enough data to show that this really did make a difference. And so I printed out a huge control chart, and it showed this, you know, 10 per reel, 14 per reel, all these big numbers, stuff like that, sometimes up to 30 defects in a reel. And then under it, I said, we lose, you know, on average, we're losing X number of feet of product at this cost. And here's the total. And it was in the hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, because when you say, like, out of all that feet of tubing, you have 14 mm-hmm. defects, I mean, 14 seems low. When you're talking about it, I'm like, well, yeah, that's not 10, terrible, feet. Depending on what you're doing, right?
Right. Yeah. But if it comes in at 287 feet and you have to scrap the 287 feet because it's not 300, it's 287 feet times X dollars. And it happens over and over again. And so I rolled it out and put the number of, this is what it costs us on average. And here's the new die. The new die costs us this much to make. And then one of the managers asked, where did you get the die that made this difference? And we can't talk about that. Because
you did the the black magic claim.
That's right.
Did it work?
It just worked. And actually, it turned out that the technician got a company-wide recognition for stealing an idea from another division. And it was called the Not Invented Here Award. And it came with a $1,000 check. So the guy at the other shop that, you know, loaned us the screw and my tech who went and found it and used it, they both got $1,000 and a plaque for their desk and an award, actually. So it was unrelated to the statistics.
What was this award again? Let's back up a little, Fred, because I've never heard of this before.
It was brilliant.
So it was to encourage like cross-pollination between the different divisions? Is that what it?
Yeah, there's 12 divisions and it was, you know, billion-dollar company and we're all on the same site.
Yeah.
We're close enough to each other, but it was, oh, they don't understand our problem kinds of stuff all the time. And we, a lot of us did very similar things. And so it was frustrating to the CEO and his staff to say, why don't you just talk to these people over here? And so they created an award to encourage it. And it knew it could never work if it went through management. So if you spot an idea in another group or you're in a group that says that could help this other team, you both get an award for just making it happen.
Oh.
And so that's how we ended up solving the problem. But it only really had a huge impact when we're showing off the value of this control chart and how you can quantify the loss that we had and the change that was made. Here's the difference in the chart before and after the new equipment. And here's how much money we are avoiding putting in the scrap bin.
Yeah. And this sort of thing can happen with services too.
Oh yeah.
If you're doing services and you always have benchmarks you need to meet. And I'm not necessarily talking about customer service, but instead mm-hmm. of manufacturing, there's like field service and that kind of thing
mm-hmm.
where if mistakes are made or if things politely aren't
said
happening,
in passive tense.
if things aren't happening as they're contracted, so it's considered a failure,
mm-hmm.
you can start to quantify those things. In monetary terms, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to be a little bit creative. You know, scrap is easy in a production line, and you just look at the trash bin and going, not only does it cost us money for somebody to haul that away, there's product in there that we could have sold kinds
of
things.
The cost of lost opportunity.
Right. Yet there's also just engineering time. You know, that report that I was filling out that had no purpose, it's like, all right, if there's 40 of us filling this report out and nobody uses it for anything, that's 40 times the average pay of all these engineers per month. Now this is a lot of money and we could have been doing something useful instead. And that adds up.
Yeah.
I wrote a short ebook that had, and I learned it from a boss, a manager at Hewlett Packard that had, I think we had 14 different ways to quantify the value of some activity. Changing the failure rate is kind of the simple one, right? You lower the failure rate, what's the cost per failure and how many are you shipping? You can quantify it pretty quick. But how do you quantify that we shipped it on time? You know, where time to market is the priority. We're going to change something so that the probability of shipping on time gets better, it improves. All right. Well, you got to think through that one a little bit in a way that is logical as a minimum. Or the easiest thing to do is just ask the manager. So we're going to do this, this, and this. And if it accomplishes this goal, what would that be worth to you? And if they say something like, well, I can sleep better at night. All right. What's that worth to you?
Mm-hmm.
Put a number on it. Have you had any challenging or creative, you know, cost of quality type discoveries?
Oh, for me, mm-hmm. it's really helping So if you're a quality reliability engineer, you usually have an internal customer. You're trying to help them improve something or make sure that the defects aren't shipped and that sort of thing.
Right.
So that's a critical question. What is this worth to you? How much is this worth to you? Or on the back end, you know, this is how much it's costing. So there, I guess those are two sides of the same coin. How much is it worth to you to help prioritize things? Or this is how much it's costing, which can also be to help prioritize things. But it's not always specifically related to hard data, which is what you were mentioning, that sometimes you have to be creative. And I think that's a jump and a mindset shift that some engineers have a hard time making. Mm-hmm. Where we're always looking for the data and we want the test to be able to prove it, or we want the hardcore numbers so that we can be accurate in our estimations.
Yep.
But that's not how these kind of things work. People, you know, accountants especially, I wouldn't say that accountants are creative, but they're not so logical and stringent to the numbers.
That's true. The ones that are too creative go to jail, but you know.
Right. So, I mean, we're logical people. We can show the path to get from A to B. And sometimes we need to communicate what logic we use to get there, but it doesn't have to be so tight. As long as you can share your idea and about the number that you got there, some people may challenge it. And that's okay. Maybe they have other information that you don't have, and that'll make it a better conversation to be able to make a decision.
But
it would be better to guesstimate some of these things and to have that talk rather than just be paralyzed by not estimating anything.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Yeah. It's lay out the logic, and then what information or what data would, if in a perfect world you had, and some things are pretty straightforward. You know, you can go to the HR department and say, what's the average loaded cost of an engineering hour? And they probably know it off the top of their head. And it's not anybody's personal salary and benefits. It's kind of the general working number in the organization. What's it cost to have an engineer work on something for an hour? Or a day, or whatever they use. But others are, what's it worth to have a peace of mind? And it says, well, what, you got to dig into some of those and go, what's causing the pain now? Oh, there's too much uncertainty. We don't know if it's good enough to ship or not. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you had a 90% assurance that it was at this threshold, would that help you sleep at night? Yes. Right. Right. What's that worth? And one of the managers laid it out, said, we have to decide whether to go to production or not in 2 weeks. And if it's not ready, we'll be making a bad part or bad product. And it'll cost us, you know, if the failure rate is above this threshold, we can't start production. So if we don't know what that number is, we're blind to make this decision. I said, okay. Well, why don't we come up with an estimate that'll give us an improved look at how good it is right now? It's not perfect, but it'll be better. And she was like, yes, that would be very helpful. And then she said, if I do this at a 50-50, we could lose $10 million if we could, you know, or we make our sales like we're supposed to, whatever that was worth. Or we delay, it's going to cost us time to get it right. Yet we avoid all the failures. And I was like, oh, okay, we can do a decision tree and sort that out, saying, here's what this added information into the system is worth to change the net outcome. End of the day, we don't really know if it's good or not perfectly. But if we know it better than 50-50, then we can alter the decision tree and its net value.
Yeah, and that's starting to get into the decision making. What do you need to be able to make a better decision? Where are you now in your level of uncertainty? and what is the specific problem that you're facing. And like you said, putting a value to it is even extra valuable to your whole decision-making process. And then at least you have a baseline. You know specifically what the problem is, what the impact of the project is going to be, and you've assigned a level of uncertainty that you have about it. So now that you have that, you can start identifying things that you can do to increase or decrease your uncertainty about it, or to better define the problem even more, so you can make a better decision.
And so
that is also valuable, to be able to talk that through with somebody making a decision to help them with that.
It doesn't have to be just, you know, increase throughput or reduce scrap or reduce the failure rate. Those are pretty straightforward problems. Sometimes you do have to be creative at it, yet you can quantify it. I have no doubt that it's always possible. Interesting. We come to this in a very similar way, or come at it in a very similar way. So that's cool. So one quick plug for the is an ebook on Ascendo Reliability, and it's under the tab or the menu ebooks. And if you log in, it's free, and it's free to sign up to become a member of the site. But it outlines, I think, a dozen, maybe 14. It's been a while since I counted them out. Different approaches to quantifying value, and it giving it some practice makes it pretty, you can do it very quickly. And it gives you a bit of a guideline for what we were just talking about with today.
And what's it called, Fred?
It's called Finding Value.
Okay.
Finding Value. It's bright orange cover. For some reason, I decided to go with orange. And it's a group of articles that it talks about the topic. So it's pretty cool. But if you've got a question, or if you have a particular scenario you're trying to sort out, how do you approach quantifying a value of that, whether it's a proposal or after the fact, you let us know. Diana and I would love to hear it, and so would the other hosts, and I'm quite sure our audience would too. So let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and you can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Diana and I and the other hosts of the show are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. So plenty of ways you can join the conversation. And if somebody writes in with the value of listening to our podcast, that would be awesome.
Ooh.
Yeah. We get nice comments every now and then, but can you quantify it? Did you learn something that saved you, $978 million? That'd be cool.
That would be cool to be able to say that too.
Yeah, instead of downloads, we could, start a survey every couple of months and say, what difference did this show make for you? And all we need is a handful of stories, and it could be, pretty insignificant.
It's hard to start thinking in this way, but I found that once you start thinking in this way, it's hard to stop.
Yeah. You see it everywhere. You're just practicing all the time. I get that.
Like with reliability engineering, you see failures and potential failures everywhere.
Well, there's that. It's hard to get on an airplane. It's my standing joke. Especially when you look at it, it's older than you are. Okay. But anyway, thanks for the idea. And I'm glad you're helping out your client with sorting this out. And I hope this brings it consciousness, at least with our audience. And hopefully they take it on and or seeing how much value they're actually creating. That would be the best part.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thanks so much, Diana. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Fred. Bye. Yeah,
bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.